Today, answers matter more than ever before. That's why IBM is helping businesses manage customer questions with Watson Assistant. It's conversational AI designed to work for any industry. Let's put smart to work. Visit ibm.com/Watson Assistant.
This is DiPietro, Canty, and Rothenberg.
Good morning, Chris Canty. How are you?
I'm doing well, Dave. I should have took Rick DiPietro's advice and taken the golf course a lot more seriously yesterday. I shot a 52 on the front nine, so things didn't go really well. But, I feel like I got it together.
Fun?
I had a great time because I was out there with my parents, but you'd like to play better than I played yesterday. I shot a 97 for the entire round, so not necessarily my best day on the golf course, but it was cool being able to hang out with mom and dad.
And there you go. And then, and in a pandemic, isn't that what it's all about? Right, Rick? In a pandemic, does the score really matter? Or is it just
Yeah, but you're not a golfer. I mean, the score always matters. I mean, you get frustrated. You saw how frustrated Tom Brady was. I mean, it just becomes, I mean, once the wheels fall off on a golf course, you just, I mean, you're pretty much just, you're picnicking on a golf cart is what you're doing.
Well, that's the thing about golf. Like, once things start to go south, it's such a mental game and you can lose your composure.
Yeah, but you go in with the best of expectations. Like, you go in thinking, like, I'm going to have my best round, and then all of a sudden you get on the course, and you can't keep the ball in the fairway, and then it becomes miserable. So then that's when the adult beverages need to be ordered. You need the swing lube. And then by the back nine, you're just a write-off. You don't even feel like teeing the ball up.
Yeah. Yeah. I can imagine.
But as long as the weather's nice, there's nothing wrong with that. Yeah, but as long as the weather is nice, and you're happy with who you're playing golf with, that's all that matters.
Sure. But the individual games, even like tennis, is different. Because tennis, if you get angry and you play harder, it can work in your advantage. If you play golf and you get angry and you become frustrated and you play harder, it could completely backfire on you.
Well, I mean, it's also the realization that, I mean, it's, you know, you're an athlete. I mean, Chris and I played professional sports. So, I mean, we consider ourselves pretty good athletes with pretty good hand-eye coordination. Although, I mean, you watch Chris try to catch a football, you'd be sickened. But, I mean, it's a sport where it's a little white ball sitting on a tee and it doesn't move and you can't hit it.
Yeah.
Does that make any sense to you? Like, how frustrating is that?
It doesn't make any sense
difficult.
At all. Yeah. Listen to Dave Rothenberg talking about using his anger to play better tennis.
Oh, it was huge. Like my coach used to tell me all the time.
You got angry and you lost and you hit the kid over the head with a racket.
Well, that was one isolated incident, but typically I got angry and I would use it, you know, for motivational tactics. John McEnroe was my guy growing up. So he was able to take this insane anger and in really unbelievable way, you know, portray it to help his game. I didn't have that level, but that's what I thought, and that's what I tried to do.
The anger didn't help me on the golf course yesterday, although I did play better on the back nine.
Well, there you go.
Yeah.
There you go.
Last time Dave played angry, he ended up with a limp.
Now, here we go. here we go.
You can go blind like that.
And here we go. And there we go. So one guy takes a shot. The other guy jumps in as well. You know, I was doing everything I could to delay the inevitable of us talking about Major League Baseball, which sickens me right now. And now I feel like I'd rather go nowhere but Major League Baseball because of the two of you making fun of me. That's what we'll do. Let's get into Major League Baseball and the excitement that we have around the negotiations between the players and the owners. Honestly, and I'm not even sitting here taking a side right now, it sickens me. It sickens me that we are here during this pandemic. All people want is for baseball to come back, and these guys are making it so difficult to potentially bring this back, Chris. It sickens me.
Yeah, I don't like it either, Dave, but the owners decided to make this a negotiation in the court of public opinion, and you knew that if they took that approach, there were going to be some ugly things that came out. Now, Jeff Passan talked about it a couple weeks ago, that you were going to hear some things that were going to be difficult to digest, but we thought that was only going to last a week. And it turns out going into the third week since they've had those conversations and they still don't have a resolution, it's starting to look like more and more that they've gotten to an impasse. And right now, when you have a return to hockey and a return to basketball seemingly imminent, it doesn't feel like baseball's coming back anytime soon. And I know that's got to be frustrating for a lot of diehard baseball fans, but especially for me, Dave, because I'm a Yankees fan and we're supposed to have a team that has the talent to compete and potentially win a championship, and to think that we might not have baseball at all this year, I mean, that's just, that's really disappointing.
See, I think we're going to have baseball. I mean, I would put the percentage at 100% that we'll have baseball. I know the clock is ticking, and usually when the clock starts ticking, I mean, that's when deals get done. No, of course, no one likes the fact that, you know, what we're focused on now is the finances with what's going on in this country, with unemployment, with, I mean, you know, people struggling, right? Financially struggling to hear, you know, billionaires and millionaires start arguing about finances. That rubs a lot of people the wrong way, but that's, I mean, that's, this is right out of, and I don't care what the sport is, this is right out of the owner's playbook. This is how they do it. I mean, they know that when push comes to shove, the players never win in the court of public opinion when we start talking about money. Which doesn't make a sense to a lot of the athletes, but that's just the reality of it.
Well, because so I think you can put a name and a face to the athlete. And I think for the most part, if I said to you, you might know it, but if I say to you, who's the owner of the Texas Rangers? Most people have no idea who that person is. So there's no face, there's no real person behind that.
Yeah, but I think it's less about that and more just, I mean, the relatability of the fan to the athlete. You know what I mean? Like, you grew up wanting to play professional sports, right? Like, I grew up wanting to be a professional baseball player. Like, that's what I wanted to do. I didn't grow up saying, hey, you know what? I want to own the,
right.
You know, I want to own the New York Islanders, right?
Right.
I wanted to be, you know, I wanted to play a game for a living. And that's as a fan. I mean, you would change spots in a heartbeat with one of these players. And for the most part, your mindset would be, hell, I'd play for free if they let me play. But I'm not talented enough. I'm not, you know, lucky enough to be one of those guys. So, I mean, that's part of it. It's like, we want to see them play, but more importantly, I mean, the mindset of a fan is, you're making this much money? You're making, you know, $37 million to play this sport? Hell, I'd play for $1 million. I'd play for 500,000 because that's how much I love my sport. And I get it, but that's not, I mean, that's not really the way that you can look at it when you start talking about how much money the league's making. And the biggest problem, which was, you know, what I took out of what Jeff Passan was saying over the last couple of days, and then you saw the Max Scherzer tweet, is how can you as players or a union make any concessions or agree to any concessions or make a deal when you're still trying to figure out what the actual revenue is? Like, I mean, you mean to tell me now, like, we're at this point where we're, what, June 1st? I mean, that's when they said, like, Passan said by the, you know, start of June something had to be done.
Which is Monday.
Yeah, but you're still, like, you as a union are still fighting over trying to get a real grasp on how much these teams are making with the national and local TV deals. Like, you don't know, like, there's no number on that yet. How do you agree to take a pay cut or any pay cut when you have no idea what the actual revenue for the league is going to be?
Yeah, that's the part to me that doesn't make a whole lot of sense in terms of the owner's position and wanting the players to take this pay cut. Because if you don't have access to the actual numbers, if you don't know what the local television revenue is, the national television revenue, the sponsorship revenue is for the projected season, even though it's going to be truncated, how can you make an informed decision on whether or not the deal that's on the table is a deal that protects your interest based on the economics of the situation? You can't. If you don't have all the information, you can't make an informed decision. So I don't blame Tony Clark. I don't blame the executive committee for the players union. I think this is a situation where the owners need to be completely transparent about everything that's going on so that you could have good faith negotiations. But that's not what this has been. And furthermore, the owners continuing to leak stuff out to the media, including internal emails and leaking, you know, what the player's stance was potentially going to be. That's the part of it that I don't like, because it's clear that the owners are trying to weaponize baseball fans against the players.
Absolutely.
In these negotiations.
Now, here you mentioned Max Scherzer, Rick. Here's what he had to say. This is a quote from Scherzer. After discussing the latest developments with the rest of the players, there's no reason to engage with MLB in any further compensation reductions. We have previously negotiated a pay cut in the version of prorated salaries, and there's no justification to accept a second pay cut based upon the current information the union has received. I'm glad to hear other players voicing the same viewpoint and believe MLB's economic strategy would completely change if all documentation were to become public information. So at least for today, it feels like most of the active players are on the same page. I don't know how long that lasts for, Rick, but it feels like we're there at this very moment.
Yeah, but I think what makes it worse and why both sides are so, you know, hell bent on getting their way, and they're both, you know, both sides are dug in, is because of the timing of this. Because, I mean, to Chris's point, I mean, that's naturally what you would want is, you know, transparency from the owners, right? Like, how much money are you going to make? But I mean, they're a year away from renegotiating the CBA. And it's the same thing with the players. If all of a sudden we give you 50-50 split, which is, you know, pretty much a salary cap, and you get a taste of, you know, a salary cap, you better believe that the owner's going to be fighting for a salary cap, you know, a year from now when the CBA is up. Same thing with the players. Once we get a chance to see your books and we actually know what you're making, I mean, that gives us more leverage moving forward with these next CBA negotiations. You know what I mean? Like, this is not great timing to have both sides give in. And as far as the players are concerned, because I can see both sides, and listen, I'm as pro player as it gets, but to say you already played, I mean, you already took a pay cut. You didn't take a pay cut. I mean, you haven't taken a pay cut yet. I mean, you're going to get paid for half a season. So, I mean, if you were going to make, you know, $20 million, that was for 162 games. If you're going to play 82, then you'll get paid half of that. So you really haven't taken a pay cut, have you?
I mean, you haven't taken a pay cut, but I think the players' willingness to play more than 82 games is one of those things that the owners need to take a long, hard look at, because listen, the players want to get as much money as they possibly can. And if the owners are saying, well, the 82 games is not going to be enough revenue for us to generate where we feel like we can operate and we can have, you know, a viable economic season, well, then we'll try to give you more games in order for you to have more opportunities to satisfy whatever, you know, benchmarks you might have in terms of when it would make sense for you guys to decide to play baseball as opposed to not play baseball. But I think the players' willingness to play more games is one of those things that we have to take seriously in this. And, you know, based on where we're at right now in the calendar, if you're going to play more than those 82 games that was thrown out in the initial proposal by the owners, then you got to come to some agreement pretty quickly here. You have to have more urgency about trying to find some common ground, and it just feels like both sides have no interest in doing that.
Yeah, but here's the other thing, though, too. And this is, you know, Chris, when we always have our conversations back and forth, and, you know, you have a strong point and I have a strong point, and then we kind of come to the agreement that, you know, it's just what we would hope would happen is just that's a perfect world scenario that doesn't exist. Like, because everyone mm-hmm. has their own, you know, personal interest involved. It's like, okay, we'll play 100 games. And then ownership comes back and says, well, you know, the most important thing for us is going to be the revenue from playoffs in the World Series. And if we elongate the season, if there is a second wave, we could lose those games. Well, how would you avoid a second wave? Well, that would be having teams, you know, half the teams in Florida and then half the teams in Arizona. But that doesn't work now because for some reason we're going to have, you know, teams play in their own home ballparks and have to jump on planes and travel. So it's like, I mean, there feels like a way that you could do this, but because, you know, the owners have their own, you know, own incentives and the players have their own incentives, that we're having a hard time coming to the best decision.
But here's the one thing that nobody can answer for me, Rick and Dave. Why are the owners opposed to deferring a portion of the players' salaries? Like, if the players are hell-bent on having their prorated salaries for whatever season that they're going to have this year, why can't the owners defer a part of that prorated salary for future years? What's wrong with that? Like, I get
well,
that
because
the
they
downside
don't feel like
of it
to.
Would be the teams. I get that the downside of it would be the teams carry a little more debt into 2021 and beyond. But I mean, that's a way that you can make it work. It feels like baseball already has the mechanism in terms of how they pay their players to be able to give the owners some degree of cost certainty in a precedented year. But then you also give the players some security in knowing that we're not going to ask you to take on more risk for less money.
Because I think they're at a point right now.
To me, that sounds like, to me,
that
feels like splitting a baby.
When was the last time you had owners splitting babies? They don't.
Yeah,
I mean, they're gonna try to get their best deal. And then, I mean, if they do want to, when I heard this first proposal, when you really dig deep into it and you realize that 65% of the league makes $1 million or less, I mean, this is a strategy used by ownership in every sport. Every time we get to CBAs, it's split the union, and that's what they're trying to do. And they're trying to put as much pressure as possible on, you know, the players to make the decision, because that's usually what we do. Is we love our sport, we want to play. That's what we do. We'll come back. So, I mean, does a deal end up getting done when we have to get it done? I would probably say yes, because I think that they, for the most part, owners, you know, owners do want to play, But I think they're at a point now where they're going to push as hard as they can and try to get the best deal possible for themselves.
And how bad is the look if you don't play? I mean, if you don't play games with what's going on, and I'm not even taking a side. I'm just saying if hockey comes back and plays and basketball comes back and plays and college football goes off in the spring and baseball can't figure out a way, and I agree with you. I don't know 100%, but I think there's a very good chance that they still play. But if you don't, and Kay keeps saying, you know, it won't be irreparable in years. It might get better, but it'd be an awful look for the game of baseball, Chris, if they don't come back and play this season. If they can, if it's because of financial issue, if they don't come back and play, I think you have a real problem on your hands.
No, it'll be a bad look, Dave. But I mean, we're talking about an 82-game season. I mean, we're already in June. I mean, today is May 28th. I mean, if you're talking about having a 3-week ramp-up period for spring training, then that puts you at the end of June. And you're trying to get 82 games in. I mean, think about that, Dave.
Yeah, you'll have to play July, August, September, and then have the or into maybe into early October, and then have the playoffs after that.
Even right now, if they were able to come to an agreement today, getting 82 games in would be very aggressive. Very aggressive. Not doable, but very aggressive. So, but based on what we're hearing come out right now, it feels like the players and the owners are at an impasse, and I'm not sure how they're going to work past it if the owners aren't going to submit the documentation to the MLBPA and give them all the information that they're looking for, so they can come to their own conclusions about the finances of the situation. If that doesn't happen, then I see the players being dug in. And you could see another situation like what happened in 94. Where they just decide they're not going to play baseball.
I think it'd be bad for the game of baseball, I'll tell you that.
No, it'd really be terrible. Bad. Yeah, but that would be terrible. I mean, especially, you know, as you move forward. Like, I mean, you'd know now how much money you would lose. Like, if you're one of these players and you say, you know, we're dug in, we're going to lose, you know, what we were supposed to make this season. I mean, to try to forecast moving forward what that would do to the sport as far as, you know, how many people want to watch it, how many people show up to games. That's a scary proposition for baseball, man.
And it's not a sport that's, you know, that's flourishing to begin with. It's a sport that we talk about all the time. How many times have we had the discussion? How do you change it? How do you, you know, quicken the pace of it? How do you make it better? The fans are getting older. Well, if you do something like this, if it dies for a year, I mean, how do you recover from that?
You might not. I mean, listen, you might not. I mean, we had the steroid era that kind of brought us back, you know, after that strike. And I mean, I think eventually, you know, you'd start to win people back. I don't think the diehards would go anywhere. But I mean, baseball was in a tough spot to begin with before this whole pandemic hit. I mean, people's passion for the game has been waning for years, man. I mean, they used to be America's pastime. It's not even close to that anymore. I mean, I think baseball's probably behind the NBA at this point.
I don't even think it's probably.
Okay, so, I mean, now, I mean, even if you come back, too, now all of a sudden you're talking about going up against NHL playoffs and NBA playoffs.
Yeah, but we'll be so starved. Come on. If baseball comes back, people would eat it up. And people have time.
You say starve, but if all of a sudden I turn the TV on and I got three NHL playoff games in the same day, and I got, you know, NBA games wall to wall, I mean, you just think that the casual sports fan is going to choose baseball over that?
Well, I don't know about the casual sports fan.
Well, that's what they're trying to get, is the casual sports fan. They already got the diehards. Yeah, we'll watch. Of course we'll watch. I watch every single game. They're not worried about me or you or Canty. They're worried about the people that are just sports fans in general that aren't choosing to watch Major League Baseball right now.
I mean, baseball does have a fan problem, to Rick's point. I mean, they have the oldest average fan base. I think it's in the 50s. So, I mean, they've got to figure out a way to be able to attract a younger demographic, and the opportunity to do that is right now. I don't think anybody thought about this when we had the outset of this pandemic, but, I mean, one of the things that we started discussing as these conversations went back and forth between the players and the owners is that if they were able to find a path forward and play some semblance of a season, that you would have a chance to have more eyeballs on your sport just by virtue of people not having a lot of live entertainment, a lot of live sports to watch. And so it's one of those things where, you know, they're playing a dangerous game of chicken. Right now, I feel like the MLBPA and the MLB owners are both driving toward a cliff, and they're looking over to see who's going to stop first. That's what this feels like.
Yeah, but here's the thing, though, Chris. And I mean, that's what it feels like right now. I mean, when I saw that first, well, I mean, ends up being the second proposal, whatever it is, with, you know, guys taking these humongous pay cuts, it didn't feel like the owners wanted to play. Like, because there was no chance. I mean, of course, the players, when they saw that, were going to feel disrespected. Like, it's a disrespectful offer. Like, there's no chance we're going to agree to that.
Right. At least give us something. Something to chew on, right?
Why? But here's the thing, though, Dave. Why would the owners do that at this point? Right? We're not at a point where a decision has to be made. You already know what the players want. Right? As long as the safety stuff is cleared up, that can be agreed upon. Right? Like, that's something that feels like at the moment is on the back burner because everyone's so focused on the finances. The owners, when this is all said and done, and if they really do want to have a season, they can just go back to, okay, you'll have your 82 games in prorated salaries. Like, they always have that as a safety net. Like, that will be, like, if that's the deal they want to sign, they can sign that deal whenever they want.
Sure.
And the players will agree to it.
Of course they will, and they should.
Okay, so you push, the owner's mindset has to be, we'll push. And then, you know, when we have to make a decision, we always have this deal in our back pocket that they'll agree to.
Right, but don't you have to make a decision? I mean, today's May 28th.
Well, you have to make a decision, and that, who knows what that date is. But, I mean, if I'm making a deal, and I don't care what the deal is, I have a drop-dead date. Like, I want to have this deal done by this day. So I'm going to try to exert as much leverage as humanly possible until I get to that date. And that's when I'll be most willing to compromise.
Yeah.
Like, it's like when you're buying a house, like if you're buying a house and, I mean, your first offer is not going to be asking price.
No, of course not. But if my house is $1 million, am I going to make an offer for $400,000 or is it just ridiculous?
Well, it depends on, but no, again, it would seem ridiculous unless you know that the people that are selling the house need to get the hell out of the house. Like, they're incentivized to sell the house. Like, right now, if you're trying to buy a house with what's going on with this pandemic, you wouldn't, I mean, if the house was, I mean, if the person was asking $1 million for the house with what's going on, and you were trying to buy the house, what would you offer?
Lowball them.
Yeah. No, way lower than 750.
Lower than 750?
No, oh, yeah, offering at least, probably $400,000, not even half.
And they go take a walk.
Yeah, and then you'd wait a week, and then you'd wait another week because they haven't sold the house. And then you say, you know what? I'll bump it up to $500,000. What do you think? Knowing the whole time, if you get it for $750,000, you're still scoring. I mean, it's still a score.
Of course it is.
Because you have a price in your mind. Like, this is what I'm going to spend, and this is what I think they'll take. So, the owners know this. The players want the prorated 82 game. That's what they want. 82 games with the prorated salaries. They'll say yes to that. So why would I give it to them now if I don't have to? I'll push. And then when we need to make a decision, then we can always fall back on this offer.
But, Rick, what you're saying just reinforces what I believe the entire time, which is that the owners are using the pandemic to be opportunists in terms of shifting the dynamic and finances in Major League Baseball. Like, I mean, they negotiated that, back in March 27th, that the players would receive their prorated salaries, but that if for some reason they weren't able to have fans in stands, they would want to revisit the negotiations. Why would they be thinking that far ahead when we were just starting to find out information about the pandemic, about the coronavirus?
Because they're smarter than we are.
But, well, exactly. It's because they were planning to take this tact with the players. This was a part of their strategy all along. We'll have the safety net of prorated salaries because that's already been floated out there because it's been in the media. That will be, you know, the default position that we'll come back to. But since we've got time, since we're not planning on playing a full season anyway, why not push as much as we can, throw out ridiculous offers to the players, and if we get them to bite on it, then all the better for us.
Yeah,
but
then
even
we win.
If they don't, it's still a solid proposal for us that we can move forward and play a shortened season, knowing that everybody's taking a little bit of a haircut.
Well, because you already won. Because, you know, when you made that original deal, I mean, you knew. I mean, this is why they're billionaires and we're not. Is, you know, as you forecasted moving forward, that the chances you having fans in seats were probably be close to zero, right?
Exactly.
So, and then, I mean, you preyed on what the players wanted, right? Like, just how NFL owners preyed on, you know, safety for the players, less practices and everything else. Well, guess what? It costs us less money because now we don't have to open up facilities. It's not costing us a penny to have you guys have less practices, so we'll give you that. Okay, you guys want a year service time? No problem. You're going to take half your salary. When in actuality, makes really no sense I get why it sounds like it makes sense, but you don't get paid for, you don't get paid per game. You get paid per day. Like, it, as a player, you're getting paid per day, not per game. So I understand that you think, well, half the work, half the pay, but you're getting paid by the day, not by how many games you play. Like, if you're injured and you play, if it's 162 and I only play 50 of those games, I don't get just paid for 50 of the games. I get paid for the entire season.
Sure.
It's not the player's fault that, I mean, this happened. But they already agreed to it. So, I mean, the owners have that. We'll pay you for half of the games. It's not like these guys aren't doing anything. I mean, these guys are still working out. So you're paying them. I mean, they should be making something to do what they're doing now, right?
Like, yeah, I agree with that.
It's not expected. Like, okay, we have no season, so we're just going to hang out and not do anything.
No, you better be ready to play when it comes time to play baseball.
Okay, but you're not paying for that now. We're not getting, I mean, the players aren't going to get paid for that. They're going to get played once the season restarts. You know what I'm saying? Do you understand what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like, you don't get paid by the game. You're getting paid by the day.
But is it, doesn't it almost overlap? Like, 82 games is 90 days or, you know, like, it's not much of a difference, is it?
No, but it's not the NFL. Like, I'm not getting game checks in the NHL.
Right, I'm not
getting game checks in Major League Baseball. I'm getting paid for each day. I get paid a certain amount. Like, even if it's a day off, like during the season, if it's a day off, I'm still getting paid the same amount for that day that I would on a game day. So in actuality, you could make the argument as a player is, you know, it's not our fault. We have guaranteed contracts. It's not our fault that, you know, we can't have a season. But, I mean, I still am, you know, training as if there were a season, so I should get paid for that day.
Yeah. Yeah. Let's go to Darren in Rockaway Beach. Darren, you're first up on 98.7 ESPN.
Hey, what's going on, guys?
What's up, buddy?
About that. Listen, how do you like this theory? I mean, it's a little off the wall, but it's been, there's already been claims received in this, how do you think about the, I really think with that proposal that the owners threw out the players, what do you think of the odds that, they really don't want to have a season at this point, and, they're looking to claim these, they may have a pandemic type insurance. It's been out there before. What do you think about that?
I don't think they have. I don't think Major League Baseball has pandemic insurance.
Wimbledon had it.
Yeah, I don't think Major League Baseball does.
Well, I think if they had it, they probably would be very happy to collect on it.
Mm-hmm.
And you can't insure. You know, no company could insure baseball.
Yeah, but again, I mean, that's
$10.7 billion last year,
right?
Yeah,
but that goes back to, I mean, not as a union having a real clear understanding of how much money the ownership is actually making. Like, that's the biggest problem. Like, you don't know. Like, I mean, okay, we'll split revenues 50-50. Well, I don't even know what are we splitting? Like, how much is that? I mean, what are we talking about? If I'm still fighting to try to get,
right, you have no idea.
Get the numbers for your local TV deals and your national TV deals. I mean, seriously, how am I going to go to my players and say, hey, we got to take this percentage of our pay we got to get rid of because we have no idea how much they're making or how much they're losing.
No.
So Mike Trout's going to take an 80% pay cut, not knowing how much the owners are actually losing?
That's what they'd like.
Well, of course that's what they like. And this is why they're smart, too, is that you make an offer so bad that it pisses off players to the point where they actually speak out. They do what Blake Snell did, because now they look worse.
Right. You don't see the owners coming out and making any public statements.
No, because there's less of them. And this is what they do. This is how it always works. They always try to divide the union because they know every single player is in a different situation financially. Some mm-hmm. can afford to miss games. Some can't. Some could care less about the money. They just want to play. Every player is in a different position in his career. And how much longer his career will last, how much money he's making now. Is he, you know, a guy in his second year that's looking to make a name for himself that doesn't want to miss out? I mean, this is what they do, man. And this is how they usually win for the most part. You don't think
it's
Major League Baseball... But, you know, Chris, you don't think Major League Baseball is looking at this and saying to themselves, why are we the only league that doesn't have a salary cap? How much better, how much easier would our lives be if we had a salary cap?
Oh, yeah, especially the small market teams like the Royals, like the Marlins, like the Padres. They would absolutely love to have a salary cap and giving them cost certainty in terms of what their workforce is going to charge them for the upcoming season so they can do a better job with the financial projections and guarantee that they're profitable. I mean, that's really what it all comes down to. The owners wanting to make sure that they don't have to operate in the red, that they can operate in the black. And to me, it's just one of those things where the owner's interests are more aligned than the player's interests. And so the owners have used this particular strategy in order to divide the players, put as much public pressure on the players as they possibly can, and see if the players would fold. All the while knowing that they already have an agreement in place that they could live with paying the players their prorated salaries.
And what it does too, here's the other thing though too, Dave, and you know this, I'm sure, you know, everyone, not everyone, but a lot of people that listen to this show, I'm sure you've seen Shark Tank before, mm-hmm. and they go
great
back
show,
and forth.
By the
and,
way.
Well, yeah, it's a terrific show, but Mr. Wonderful asking, how much do you bring in? How much do you spend? You know, what are your margins? First of all, the valuation of these Major League Baseball teams over the last decade have gone through the roof, right?
The lowest valued franchise is the Marlins at $1.2 billion.
Okay, exactly right. And that for, you know, these owners is, I mean, what they're trying to accomplish. Make your franchise as valuable as possible. What would make your franchise more valuable is to have cost certainty. So when someone looks at your books, they know exactly how much you're spending. And you know what I mean? As opposed to, well, we don't know. We could spend this much money one year, or we could spend this much money the other year. Knowing going in that this is the maximum money that you'll have to spend on player costs only makes your team more valuable. Does it not?
Of course. Of course. This actually feels to me like it's the first time there's been any sentiment from the public of being annoyed at the owners.
A little bit.
Does it?
Yes. I don't remember people ever taking a side of the players before in baseball.
I still don't feel like the public is taking the side of the players with baseball.
I wouldn't go as far as saying they're taking the side of, but I feel like there are more people now that are kind of sympathetic to the player than there typically are. Typically, it's like 95-5. Now maybe it's 75-25. Still
I don't
more,
feel that at all.
You don't feel like that?
I don't
or,
feel,
you
like
feel
like
that
at
or
all.
Am I crazy with this?
I feel like this is all on the players. Like the public is upset at the players for them talking about it and them making money the issue when the issue should be the safety of the players. And if the players have already come to terms with the owners on protocols in place that they would be comfortable returning to play with, then why aren't you out there playing? You got over 30 million Americans that are unemployed, Dave. Fans of the sport don't understand the players not going back to play. They just think they should take whatever they get from the owners and go back out there and be a distraction from what the public has been dealing with from the last 3 months.
Yeah, I still get that. But I think that there are more people that look at it fairly and say, you know what, I still want the player to play. I think the player should play. But it does seem a little shady of what the owner happens to be doing right now. I think there's a little bit more of that. Rick, what do you think on this?
Well, I think I feel that way. I know Chris feels that way.
No,
I mean,
I
we're
know
part
you
of the
guys
union.
Feel like, but I'm
I mean, I was on
the
I was on the executive committee. I don't think it's the masses. No, I mean, I think it's smart people you see on TV talking about it. Yeah, I mean, it's Dominique Foxworthy. I mean, Foxworthy that was actually on one of these committees. I mean, you're hearing intelligent people kind of now point to more towards ownership being the bad guys in the situation. But I agree with Chris. I don't think that's how the majority of the fans feel at the moment.
In these trying times, important to remember we'll pull together as a community. Small business all over going to be feeling the lasting effects of this pandemic. If you are a small business trying to get the word out that you're still serving the community, let us know. Send an email to 987ESPN@gmail.com and let us know your story so we can pass the word along to our community. All right. This is a really upsetting story. I'm sure you've all seen it by now. George Floyd being killed, really, by the Minneapolis police officer, pinned him down, couldn't breathe. For minutes and minutes, the video is all over the place right now, and it's disturbing and it's sad. It's elicited a ton of response, and the world of sports has gotten involved. And LeBron James posted a photo of himself wearing the "I Can't Breathe" T-shirt yesterday, I guess, in response to the death of George Floyd. And I mean, it's a big conversation starter. And Chris, I mean, the one thing you could say about LeBron and you could not say about Michael Jordan. Is if there's injustice that he sees, he will absolutely unequivocally take a stand on it.
No, and I love LeBron James for doing that. And he posted the graphic on social media a couple of days ago when all of the news first came out. And it had a picture of Colin Kaepernick taking a knee. And then it had the officer from the Minneapolis Police Department having his knee on George Floyd's neck. and it talked about this is why Colin Kaepernick took a knee, to stand up against social injustice, police brutality, and things of that nature. And so, just the juxtaposition from that graphic, you know, it says a lot. It speaks volumes. And unfortunately, we're at a point in our country where we're not past racism. And we're seeing that at an institutional level somewhat with the continued murders of unarmed black men at the hands of law enforcement. And Dave, something's got to change. I mean, we keep talking about it, whether it's Alton Sterling or Philando Castile and now George Floyd. Something has to change. Tamir Rice, something has to change. And until you know, everybody stands up and rebukes what happened to Mr. Floyd, and we actually start to hold officers accountable for doing things like this, I think we're going to have incidents like this continue to happen. And that's just not a reality that I want to live in.
Well, it's awful. I mean, it's disturbing. It's heartbreaking. It emotes anger from it. And I actually love, Rick, the fact that, you know, one of the most famous athletes on the planet takes a stand and will not be quiet about this issue right now.
I think we all do. And that's, I mean, something that LeBron James is more than happy to, well, he's great at it, but he's more than happy to do it. I mean, he wants to be involved. I mean, he wants to stand up for what he believes is right. And, you know, it was one of those situations for me. I almost actually called Chris at the time when it happened. Cassie and I had to sit down and really talk about it and try to explain it. So what Milo does now is when he wakes up and he'll come downstairs is now he knows how to use the remote control. So, you know, he'll throw on a show or whatever he wants to watch. And then, you know, when he's done or he's going to eat his breakfast, he changes the channel back and he goes to the news because he thinks Cassie wants to watch the news. And she actually came up and got me and said, you know, Milo just saw what happened and asked me, why are they doing this? And she had no idea what to tell him. Like, Mom, why won't they get off him? And she's like, what do I tell him? I don't know.
I think you tell him the truth. But don't you try to tell him the truth?
Yeah, you do, but he's 5 years old. Does he comprehend the truth? Like, he has no idea. Like, he doesn't know the difference. He doesn't know what racism is. As far as he's concerned, I mean, like, when Canty comes over, he's not black or white.
No, I know what you're beautiful.
He's Uncle Canty.
Right.
And Canty's 6'8", rolling around on the floor wrestling with Milo. That's like, he loves Canty. He has no idea. So we have to have a talk about it. Like, what do we say to him? How do we explain this to him? And after you watch the video, how do you explain what happened?
You can't explain it. You can't. I mean, Chris, the only way you can explain it is just rampant racism.
No, it's racism. And what happened on the video was murder. Dave, you mentioned it. I guess you weren't really thinking about it. You said that he was killed. No, he was murdered. He was already in handcuffs. He was restrained. All the videos that have come out to this point show that George Floyd wasn't resisting arrest and that the actions that the police took were not something that, you know, law enforcement training teaches them. It's not. I mean, there's a reason why the Minneapolis Police Department reacted as quickly as they did. They fired him the day after the incident took place because they recognized what happened. They saw the video and they know that that's so beyond what law enforcement is supposed to do in those situations. I got a buddy of mine that works for the NYPD. His name is Shane Jacobs, and he posted something on social media. And I reached out to him this morning, and I asked him, is it okay if I shared what he posted because I think it's important? He said that in his post, I'm not one for politics or even publicly expressing my thoughts and opinions on things, as I've always shed light on things when I'm asked. But this whole incident is truly disturbing to me. George Floyd died a slow and gruesome death. People are shot all the time, and this man had to bear the agony of, one, fighting for air, and two, knowing he was going to die. Imagine the fear going through his mind during all of this. He was told to get up, and I'm not sure if anyone has ever been rear handcuffed, but it's very difficult to get up while restrained. This whole incident was so poorly handled, and there was a complete lack of concern for human life. And the price that has to be paid, every cop in the nation is portrayed in a negative light all because of the actions of one. This is a profession that is always under the microscope. It bothers me that this officer didn't consider this man's life 3 minutes in and this man was in limbo and did nothing. I truly hope that justice is served. And coming from one officer, I can honestly say that the actions of this one do not properly reflect that of 90% of cops. As pissed off, upset, and disgusted as many people are, just know that all good cops out here feel the same way you do. That's what he said, Dave.
Yeah, it's well written, eloquent stuff, and he's right.
But most people that saw that were horrified
and disturbed by that video. I mean, it's an awful video.
It's an awful video, Dave, but I think that everybody has to recognize that we all have to use our voices and stand up and rebuke those types of actions that lead to those types of outcomes from law enforcement. We have to. And I'm not saying that police officers don't have a tough job. They absolutely do. But what those officers did on Monday to George Floyd makes it even harder for officers that are doing the right thing. It makes it harder for them to do their job because they're interacting with communities that trust them less and less.
And rightfully so.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, think about it, Dave. I mean, if you're a young black man, why would you trust law enforcement to protect and serve you? Why would you?
Based on everything
that we've seen in the past, you know, 3-4 years, why would you do that? You wouldn't. And I guess with the technology and camera phones, we're seeing these videos come out, and it's just hard to digest it. It's hard to process it, and it puts you in a place where you feel like you have no choice but to be adversarial toward law enforcement, where their job is to protect us. Doesn't feel like that's what's happening. But we hear more outrage about Colin Kaepernick taking a knee before a game than we do about these things that are happening when people are losing their lives. I guess that's the point that LeBron James was trying to make, and I 100% feel him on that one.
Well, which only makes worse. I mean, which only makes it worse for, I mean, like your buddy wrote, which only makes it worse for the good cops.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, that there's now an inherent lack of trust. Like, so going into a situation knowing that, okay, you know, you don't trust me, I don't trust, like, it just makes for, you know, these incidents happening way too often. And I don't even know if there's words to describe how I felt watching that video. I don't know if there's strong enough words.
Oh, you watched the murder.
I originally, going through Twitter, I think it was Taylor Twellman's tweet. Taylor Thomas tweet, and he tweeted the video, and like I forget what it said, but it insinuated that this man was killed, and I was like, "There's no way this can't." And I watched the video, and I'm still watching the video. I'm like, "This, get off of him! What are we doing here? Get off of him! Get off of him!" And then it's over, and you're like, "Did that really just? You couldn't believe that you just saw that?
No,
you know what I mean?
Because he was subdued." I mean,
but it's the definition of senseless.
There was no reason to continue doing what was done. None.
He wasn't by himself either. The cop was not by the cop.
Cops right next to him.
And the guy's not moving. He's like, just get off of him. He's already in hit. Get off of him. Just get off of him. And even thinking about it now makes me want to.
You can't make sense, but Rick, you can't make sense of it because it's senseless. So there's no point in even trying to rationalize it. We have to recognize it for what it is, which is that prejudices and biases of that one officer, essentially racist behavior from that one officer, cost someone their lives. And just because he wears a badge does not make it any different. He murdered that man.
He
was on his neck for 9 minutes.
It makes me sad for my kids and for your kids and for Canty's kids. Just because I see how, I mean, at my kid's age now, and how they interact with classmates, how he interacts with Canty. I mean, you're not born like that.
The opposite.
No,
you know what I mean?
You're right, Rick.
And it's beautiful, man. It's special. Like watching him on these Zoom. I mean, the school he goes to, he's got, you know, all races, all ethnicities, and it doesn't matter to him. It's his boys. It's his buddies. He doesn't care where they're from or, you know what I mean? Like, it's just, he loves all of them and he misses them every single day. Like he lights up every time he sees them on the camera. And it doesn't matter to him,
and it shouldn't matter to him.
But it's a learned behavior, man.
Of course,
the point is it's a learned behavior. Someone has to teach you to be like that.
No, it's not a gene. You don't have the a chromosome which says I hate people of different colors or ethnicities or races. This is something that is learned behavior.
No, it absolutely is a learned behavior. And Dave, one of the things that happened when Colin Kaepernick decided to take the stance that he did is, you know, we recognize why he was doing it. You know, he was trying to raise awareness for issues that were going on in minority communities, to be a voice to people that are voiceless. But I feel like we're at the point now in our society where we're all aware of the things that have been taking place over the last several years. We know that unarmed black men have been killed by law enforcement. We know about what happened with Walter Scott down in Charleston, South Carolina. Like, we know about those things. We saw about what happened in Alton Sterling in Louisiana. We saw those things. It's not like we don't know that they're going on. It's just a matter of whether or not we're willing to do something about it. And Dave, I got to tell you, I want to be optimistic about it. But after hearing about what happened to the man in Central Park that was bird watching,
which was
disgusting, and the woman decided to weaponize his blackness against him and call the police. That's the type of stuff that scares me, because it lets me know that white people are aware of it. And not only are they aware of it and they're not doing anything to try to fix it, but you have the audacity to try to weaponize it against black men. How scary is that? It's terrifying. And that's why I'm saying we all have to play our part. We all have to do more. Whatever you think you're doing, you have to do more. You know what? I appreciate Peter Rosenberg from the K-Show, because last night he went on IG and he talked about it. And he said, if you saw what happened to George Floyd and you weren't disgusted, I mean physically sick, then you are a part of the problem. And right now, every American should check themselves. Because if you consider yourself a patriot and you love this country, then you need to stand up against what happened to Mr. Floyd this week.
Very well said.
All right, here we go, fellas. We did some MLB. We did some baseball. I was going to do the pitchers with baseball, but, I mean, that just doesn't seem as fun as doing an NBA version today of CMT. Actually, in honor of me scooping Woj, which is the first time I've ever scooped Woj, but I'm going to take full credit for it.
How'd you scoop Woj?
Well, did you hear what Woj is reporting now? The new NBA plan, potentially, down in the, we can't call it a bubble, because the players didn't react well to the bubble. Down in Orlando?
Yeah.
In Disney? Going with the four Western teams that we mentioned yesterday?
Yeah. No, we did not mention it. You mentioned it. It was your baby.
Yeah, to make it 20.
Yeah.
That's getting a lot of traction, Dave. Mm-hmm. Lot of traction.
Mm-hmm.
20 down in Orlando.
He says per sources and quotes you.
No, I'm just thinking maybe if I ever get to go on SportsCenter again, maybe they'll put me ahead of Woj instead of behind.
Well, if you would have
talked about setting
up
to fail, too. Put me behind Woj and passing. Awful.
They really did not do you any favors. That's why the tub would have been such a great idea. Come out of a bubble.
Yeah, probably not. I was told that was not a great idea. All right, here we go. We're going to go with the NBA version, CMT. We're going to go backcourt. Ready? We're going to go backcourt.
Okay.
So I'm going to give you Dame Lillard. Dame time.
Yep.
Russell Westbrook. Or Ben Simmons?
Let me write this. Westbrook.
Westbrook, Dame time, and Ben Simmons.
Oh, God, this is really awful.
Not an easy one.
No.
Got youth but can't shoot.
Oh, it's,
I mean, it's, yeah, there's a lot
Simmons
going
is such a matchup nightmare and can take games over without even being able to shoot. All right. I'm going to marry. I think this is I'm going to be very unpopular here. I think, Chris, you're going to completely disagree, and you might as well, Rick. I'm going to marry Damian Lillard.
If it was socially acceptable, I wouldn't marry them.
I think he's sensational. I think if you – I mean, he's a star player. We've seen him in big spots come up huge. I'll marry him. I'm going to cuddle Ben Simmons.
Oh.
Bombs and hellacious seeds.
I'm going to cuddle Ben Simmons. And yeah, I'm gonna do it. I'm gonna trash Russell Westbrook.
Look at this garbage!
Wow.
Look at this garbage!
Wow.
I don't feel great about it. I think I could change if you asked me the same question tomorrow, but right now Westbrook to me feels like a huge stats guy and not as much a team leader. I could be wrong. I feel very uncomfortable with this question.
Yeah, I can't trash a guy that goes as hard as Russell Westbrook does night in and night out. I can't do it. I'm going to agree with you, Dave. As long as he doesn't decide to start rapping, I am going to marry Dame Dollars.
If it was socially acceptable, I wouldn't marry them.
I'm going to cuddle Russell Westbrook.
Bombs and hellacious seeds.
And I'm going to throw Ben Simmons in the trash because his jumper is trash. And in today's NBA, if your primary ball handler can't shoot, then you're probably going to be lost as an offense.
So firmly, yeah, garbage. That's where I'm going. Garbage.
Yeah, let's not forget too, Ben Simmons jump shot. Dealing with the back too. Back's not good.
But
not
come good. On, he's so good.
Well, he's big. He can pass. He's good defensively.
He's terrific.
But give me Russell Westbrook's 27.5, 8-7. I'll take that.
Yeah.
Okay? So are you married to Westbrook, Rick?
No, I'm going to go with the younger player. I'm going to go with Dame Time. Plus, I was watching the This Is Sports Center commercials. Terrific commercial. A couple years younger than Russ, but I love Russ. I'll cuddle him. Can I just give me the cuddle sound, please?
Bombs and hellacious seeds.
I want to just cuddle all these guys, and then I'm going to I'll trash Ben Simmons. I'm all set with him.
I told you my selections wouldn't be popular.
No, it wasn't. It's fine. I mean, we'd all marry Dame. All right, here we go. This next one's not going to be easy. I can promise you that. I'm going to give you James Harden. I'm going to give you Steph Curry.
Uh huh.
And I'm going to give you Kyrie Irving.
All right, so I got Harden, Steph, Kyrie. All right, well, I'm marrying Steph.
If it was socially acceptable, I wouldn't marry them.
That, to me, is not all that difficult. And now I'm torn, because Harden's a tough guy to root for. Kyrie has injuries. I'm going to cuddle Harden.
Bombs and hellacious seeds.
I'm going to cuddle Harden. And for injuries and I mean, Kyrie can be difficult. And I'm not saying he's not great. He's great. But I'm going to cuddle hard. I'm going to trash Kyrie. And I feel much better about that one than I do the first one.
Firmly garbage. Look at this garbage.
Dave, I've got the exact same thing that you do. I'm marrying Steph Curry. His dominant trait is being a knockdown shooter. Maybe the best shooter the game has ever seen. That's not a perishable skill. So he'll be able to shoot when he's 60 years old. I'm going to roll with Steph Curry. I'm marrying him. That's a long-term relationship. I'm going to have the affair. I'm going to cuddle James Harden. I think he's the best isolation player in the game today. The guy can drop 35, 40 on any given night. And so I don't think there's a better pick-and-roll player in the NBA than James Harden. So I'm going to cuddle him. And then Kyrie Irving, I'm all set. I'll throw him in the trash. I mean, on top of being hurt, the guy seems like he's toxic in locker rooms. And, you know, I just, you know, in a team sport, I don't need a guy that has that kind of attitude. So I'll throw him in the trash.
And with the last name Harden, too, it does seem to fit with the whole cuddle motif. It usually does happen during the whole cuddle
that
thing.
Was not your best.
Here we go. Next one, I'm going to give you Donovan Mitchell, who should have been a Nick. Devin Booker, because I know Dave loves Devin Booker.
I do.
And Brad Beal.
God, this is not an easy one.
Brad Beal, by the way, having an unbelievable season this year.
Might I ask a question? I taking age into account here?
Everything.
Everything is into
account? Don't play dumb. I mean, yesterday you were taking in contract, age, health with the baseball. Why would it be any different now?
Well, I just want to confirm. And I want to see if the home version is any different than the one we play on the radio. Chris, why don't you? I feel like I keep going first. Why don't you?
No,
you
go ahead. Go ahead, Dave. I'm giving you honors.
Okay. Oh boy, I'm going to marry Devin Booker. I mean, he's a. They're all prolific scorers. I think he's the best of these three players. I think he's sensational. I don't have much more to say than that. This is really difficult.
He's 23. I understand it.
I mean, he's young. He's already a great player. I mean, if this is a Nick, you'd salivate it over him every day. I'll marry Devin Booker.
Mm-hmm.
If it was socially acceptable, I wouldn't marry them.
It's not Donovan Mitchell's fault that he's not a Nick, so don't. I mean, let's not hold that against
him. No, I'm not going to. But he's also 23. Good. The problem is, you give me three. You know, I mean, I could go in any direction here. I'm going to cuddle Donovan Mitchell.
I think hellacious seeds.
He's a wonderfully complete player. I mean, he has completely transformed what the Utah Jazz are right now. So I'll cuddle him, and I'm not comfortable with it, but I'll. I mean, he makes a ton of money. He's in the midst of a huge deal. I will trash very uncomfortably Bradley Beal.
Firmly. Look at this garbage. Look at this garbage.
That's bold. Wow. Dave. Bold.
That is bold, Dave. I'm with
second leading scorer in the NBA, by the way, Brad Beal.
Yeah, that's where I was going to go with that one, Rico. I'm gonna marry Donovan Mitchell. I think he's been a huge agent of change out there in Utah, making them, a top half of the Western Conference team seemingly overnight. So I'm going to marry Donovan Mitchell.
If it was socially acceptable, I wouldn't marry them.
I am going to cuddle Brad Beal.
Mm.
He's averaging 30.5 points per game this season. With no John Wall in the lineup, he's been, carrying that Washington Wizards team. There really isn't much interesting about them other than to watch the kind of performances that Brad Beal is capable of putting up night in and night out. So I'm going to cuddle him. And as uncomfortable as this is for me, I'm going to trash Devin Booker. I love his ability. I love the fact that he's one of the best shooters in the game right now, but stacked up against those other two guys, I would take those other two guys before I took him. So
it's all very difficult. It's all very. I mean, and I'm not saying you're wrong, Chris, because who knows? I mean, you just trashed a guy going for 26.6 assists and 4 rebounds a game, and I did the same with the second leading scorer in the NBA. So it's a brutal game.
Oh, you thought that one was bad? Here's the last one. This one's even worse. Save this one for last because I know this is going to give you. Well, who knows with you?
I know LeBron's going to be here. Here's how I know you're going to.
I'm not going to do it. I'm not going to put him in the backcourt. I'm not going to do it.
Okay.
I was going to, but I'm not going to do it because Canty would have a nervous breakdown.
No, Lakin is in this one then.
He'd marry and cuddle at the same time, pillow talk it. I mean, he would do everything.
Yes.
I'm going to give you Ja Morant.
Ooh.
I'm going to give you Trae Young. And I'm going to give you Luka.
That's delicious. All right. I'm going to see. This is easier for me than the others, actually. I'm going to marry Luka.
If it was socially acceptable, I wouldn't marry them.
I'm going to cuddle Morant.
Bombs and hellacious seeds.
And I love Trae Young, but he feels very one-trick pony-ish to me. He's a great three-point shooter, but he's a great three-point shooter on a horrendous team. So I actually think of all the ones you gave me today, that might have been the easiest for me.
Yeah, but you're not interested in the whole, 30 points a game and 9 assists?
I'm not interested in that. Of course I'm interested in it. But I think that Luka and Morant are better players than Trae Young. I feel good about that one.
Okay, that's fine. I probably agree with you. I'm not disagreeing with you.
Did Chris get cut off?
Did we lose CC?
We cut off, guys. Chris.
Oh, he's back. CC's back.
I'm back now by popular demand. So I got Ja Morant and I got Trae Young, Rico. I did not get the third person in that group.
Luka Doncic.
Ooh, that's an easy one for me, Rico. I'm marrying Luka.
If it was socially acceptable, I wouldn't marry them.
Yeah, I'm cuddling Ja, and I'm trashing Trae Young.
See? And you didn't even hear what I said. You were behind closed doors. I had the same exact thing, and I said it was easy for me.
Yeah, that's an easy one.
Yep, there you go.
I didn't give you guys enough credit. I thought that maybe I could tempt you with Ja.
No.
I'll take Ja Morant any day. All right, we got to go rapid fire, but we're going rapid fire, Santi, if you will.
Do you need to feel better about your life?
Just when I think you couldn't possibly be any dumber, you go and do something like this.
And totally redeem yourself!
Let's take a look at Rick's Snob Servation.
Welcome back, dum-dum.
All right, fellas, here we go. Did this happen in Florida? You guys ready for this?
We're ready.
Okay, we've heard we had a chicken on the loose. You name it, we've had it on the loose. Right? Now, to add to the list, we have a 250-pound black bear, 18-month-old male, on the loose, running around in neighborhoods. Did they use a trank dart? No, they didn't use a trank dart, because God forbid this bear runs away and gets caught in traffic. You have to be looking out for the bear's best interest. So how did they capture this 250-pound black bear, may you ask?
Oh, no.
Would you like to guess?
The other ones, people dress up as bears to sedate them?
No, practice. That was the practice.
Oh, okay.
In case the bear escaped. No, they already went through that. They actually used a few boxes of sugar donuts and a blueberry pie scented spray.
So they gave him donuts and then they subdued him? Did it work?
They caught him. Yeah, they set up a trap with sugary donuts and blueberry pie scented spray, and before you know it, bear got himself caught.
I gotta
probably
would have
got me too. Yeah, full disclosure.
Same with me. That's the playbook.
If
for
they
me
were
as
hot
well.
Now, yeah, yeah. You turn that down.
I mean, every so time you see Florida that sign, is the question. What kind of yeah, did it say? Florida. What kind? What brand of donut or no?
It did. Let me see. It did not. Initially, I thought it said Krispy Kreme, but then it says that it was a few boxes of sugar donuts and a blueberry pie scented spray.
Right after his weakness,
which is interesting too. They just happen to have a blueberry pie scented spray hanging around,
right? And boxes of donuts.
Is that pepper spray? No, it's actually blueberry pie scented
spray. Blueberry pie spray. I feel like I need to get some of that for the house, right? Just to spray it around.
Yeah, it sounds delicious.
Spray to myself. What do you guys think? Florida?
You'd like to know?
Mm-hmm.
What's the bear population of Florida, Kent? Do you have any idea?
I don't think there are a ton of black bears running around in Florida, which leads me to believe it's not Florida. But what's throwing me off is somebody had the idea that donuts and blueberry pie smell would lure the donut, lure the bear in. To me, that seems like that will be a southern type of mentality. So I think it happened in the South, but I don't think it was Florida. So I'm going to say not Florida.
This is like the job.
It was Krispy Kreme donuts. Confirmed.
It was Krispy Kremes.
But in the end, the Krispy Kreme donuts.
For some reason, that puts it over the top for me. I will say Florida. I think that they thought that they were being so smart. We got to go Krispy Kremes. We go blueberry smells. I'm going to say Florida.
Yeah, this is not great for Dunkin' Donuts. It was Krispy Kreme and it was Florida. That was downtown Fort Myers.
Wow.
Downtown Fort Myers.
Fort Myers.
That's a major city.
Downtown Fort Myers.
That's on down Florida.
Wow.
That's not northern Florida.
Wow, that's really
Black bears in Florida typically range from 250 to 450 pounds. That's the males. Wow. They estimate there are just over 4,000 bears in Florida. I had no idea that there were that many bears in Florida.
That's a lot of bears.
Not okay. So last story for today's observations.
Mm-hmm.
What? Finish, Chris. What did you say?
No, I was just going to say not only do you have to worry about the alligators, you got to worry about black bears in Florida.
It's a terrifying state for many reasons.
Yeah.
You probably take your chances with the bear or the alligators.
Wow.
Or you can walk into any convenience store without a mask. We are Florida.
Yeah, going to Walmart. Good luck. This is just the epitome of knob observations right here. I'll just tell you where this is. This is a Colorado man. So Colorado man sets up his wedding, engaged, the whole thing. In a tragic accident, his fiance passes away. And the wedding photography company will not refund his money.
Oh, come on.
No. So, yeah, he approaches them. Can I get my money back? My fiance actually passed away. One of them returned $1,800 deposit. They said this is amazing. This is what the photography company says to him. They'd extend his service to do his next wedding.
Oh my God.
That is cold blooded. Cold.
Oh my God. And with the MLB owners are bad. That is brutal.
That's cold.
Brutal. Here's what's worse though. This is what takes it over the top though. So then all of a sudden the story gets out. So this photography company gets a ton of bad publicity. So now they go on the offensive as opposed to the defensive. So now what they do is they fire back. They create a website of their own with the guy's name. And so it's the guy's name, wedding.com, in order to build their case against them. And then in the website, they say that this man admitted that the contract was non-refundable. And then also write, life is a B word, Justin.
Oh,
which
God.
Apparently now has been removed from the site.
That is some kind.
DiPietro, Catty, and Rothenberg. Weekdays at 10 on 98.7 ESPN.